Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls here at Radio Liberty at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or at 464-8295 if you're here in the Central Coast of California. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Mr. Cliff Nichols, and we're going to be talking about, well, what's happening to the forests across our country. Now, there is something called the environmental movement in the United States, and hiding behind idealism, hiding behind concern about trees and about butterflies and about wolves and about the little rabbits is another agenda. And, of course, what they have done is completely disrupt the lumbering in many of our national forests. It's led to terrible, terrible fires and the loss of homes. And it almost would appear, if you analyze what's going on, that nothing really makes sense. That instead of being concerned about blighted forests, they want to leave it there simply as a tinderbox, which can precipitate massive forest fires, as it has repeatedly throughout the country in the last several years. Well, with us is Mr. Cliff Nichols, and he's on the front lines of the battle to try to take an intelligent approach to what's going on today. Mr. Nichols, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Sam, thank you for having me.
Well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and why you're so concerned about what's happening.
Well, my name is Cliff Nichols. I'm an attorney in Albuquerque, and I am concerned because I represent clients who are being affected by the Endangered Species Act.
All right, fine. And so the Endangered Species Act certainly keeps people from using their property, from using their forest land. Why don't you just tell us, though, if you have private forest land and you want to lumber it, can they use the Endangered Species to keep you from cutting trees on your own land?
They can try and sometimes have been successful. You know, their tactics are very, very simple. And very, very successful. The Endangered Species Act basically enables them to do several things. First, they designate or they identify the species in the area act, and then once they've identified that, then they have a habitat designated. And then once they designate the habitat of that species within that habitat, they're able to isolate and litigate against individual members of whatever industry they've chosen to attack.
All right, but do you really think that they're interested in the animals and the endangered species, or is this part of a much larger agenda?
Yeah, absolutely not. I don't believe that they are interested in the animals as much as they are the target industries. A prime example is happening in New Mexico and Texas right now.
All right, we're going to let you get into that in just a moment here when we get back from this this break. Our guest this evening is Cliff Nichols, and I think you'll find this fascinating when you finally come to the understanding that many times these people are not, at least the leaders, are not really interested in the species. They're interested in changing the structure of society, indeed, an attack on Western civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Mr. Cliff Nichols, who is an attorney, and he's telling us about the problems that many of his clients are having because of the Endangered Species Act. So would you like to pick up the story from there, Cliff?
Yes, I was about to say in southern New Mexico and in Texas, there's been a reintroduced Alplomato falcon, and that falcon's designation, habitat designation that they're seeking, is throughout southern New Mexico and throughout western and southern Texas. That's a huge area. Now, this falcon is affected by certain things, which the people petitioning for the habitat have announced. And that just happens to be ranching, livestock grazing, and oil and gas development. And they've come out with proclamations in requesting the habitat, saying the escalating threat of large-scale oil and gas development is threatening the falcon and is vital that it be stopped. So when they're designating the habitat, they're pre-announcing what industry they're targeting. Now, when they do that, then they get the habitat designated, and then they don't take on the industry as a whole. What they do is isolate and litigate. Mark Ray, the Undersecretary of the Department of Interior, said that they have been particularly successful in isolating defendants. His exact words are, if you're the plaintiff, you pick your fights. And the reason you pick your fights is because one person can't litigate, can't afford to litigate to the extent the industry, if it were collectivized, could. But it also allows you to pick your forum. And you get to pick your defendant that you sue on the Endangered Species Act based on the court you want to be in. But even the Supreme Court has said that the Endangered Species Act is the supreme law of the land and that it is to be enforced whatever the cost. Now, that's the precedent. So knowing that, what you know is that when they come after your industry, they want you to litigate because they know they're playing on the downhill slope of that playing field.
And we're going to have to just interrupt you here for a moment, but I think it's so important people understand that there is an agenda behind what's going on today. And, of course, what they're doing is using the court system and laws to destroy industries and, ultimately, Western civilization.
I would agree with
you. All right, fine. Well, why don't you just then go ahead and pick up the story from there?
Okay. Well, if you know that, then you know that to litigate, you're going to spend millions and millions of dollars, the industry as a whole, in fighting, and ultimately lose. The timber, the mining, and the ranching industries throughout the West will tell you that if you observe. And so you learn from that experience, and you take a different approach. And the other approach is you take away their tools. You know the enemy to the extent... You need to know their strengths and their weaknesses. In the Art of War, the general that wrote that centuries ago, he indicated that the better of the two generals, rather than the one who fights the battles and wins, is the one that defeats his enemy without ever having to fight the battle.
Now, that was Sun Tzu, and I think he said something about supreme excellence in war is not the ability to fight and defeat your enemy. Supreme excellence is winning without fighting.
Yes, exactly. And how did he say to do that? It is to know your enemy's strengths and weaknesses in advance and to work upon those such that you can defeat the enemy without ever having to fight the battle, i.e. litigation. It behooves you to do that for two reasons. You've seen in the past that litigation causes you to lose, and after the spending of millions and millions of dollars. But if you can avoid that by knowing your enemy, then that is the more intelligent way to go. Obviously, you suffer less casualties. One of the things about the enemy that you're fighting in this environmental movement is they're not interested, to my knowledge, in the species. And that's proven by the forest conditions, which they consistently sue to prevent from being thinned when they know very well, and they use the Endangered Species Act, usually the spotted owl, for that purpose.
Now, basically, what you're pointing out then is that nobody can go in and thin out the trees, which is healthy for the forest, clear out the underbrush, which tends to...
And that is to destroy the lumbering industry and the cattle industry that uses these lands productively.
Right.
But the single greatest threat to endangered species is catastrophic fire. And so when you create forest overgrowth conditions where you have like the Biscuit Fire or the Sholo Fire in Arizona that were approximately 500,000 square acres, there's nothing more devastating to a species. So it cannot be concern for the species that causes them to do this. It's the concern over the industry, the destruction of the industries they've targeted.
Well, of course, have you ever considered the fact that this is really an attack on our society, that these are the concepts that came out of the Limits of Growth book put out by the Club of Rome back in 1971, where they talked about really, of course, how we had to limit the use of natural resources. And really the problem was not even the shortage of natural resources, but mankind itself. And this is how we are going to completely disrupt Western civilization by using the laws to push an agenda. And that agenda will be the destruction of civilization as we know it, because that's essentially what they're doing.
Well, and I agree with that. I did not know that, but I agree with it. And so knowing that, you have to identify who is it you are in battle with. Who is it you are fighting?
Well, who are you fighting?
Well, you're fighting the environmentalist leadership on one hand, but the beast actually has two heads. The leadership is speaking for the general membership of their groups. But I don't believe that they're accurately representing their members. For example, to create a forest condition that causes a catastrophic fire, but without, and telling you to fireproof your house, but never mentioning how to fireproof a spotted owl nest, belies the intent of what they're, or the stated intent of what they're doing. But it's fascinating. You watch their litigation. And what you find is they use certain things, and all of them are provided under federal law. You are given the federal laws to file the suit. You are given the federal courts to bring the suit in. When the science is demanded, that science proving or disproving the environmentalist case is almost always provided by the federal government, the Fish and Wildlife Service, or the Corps of Engineers. And then when it's all said and done, and if they are given a victory by whatever science is provided by the government also has made a provision in the Endangered Species Act that pays the environmentalists attorney's fees. So you have the laws and the courts and the Supreme Court rendition of the Endangered Species Act, and you've got the government science substantiating the environmentalist lawsuit, and then paying the environmentalist for bringing the suit. So the other head would have to be identified as the legal structure of the federal government that allows that to keep taking place. And as long as that is in place, then you have to assume that what is being done to these various industries is being done with the government's blessing.
Well, of course, when you speak of the government, I think that there is another force out there, that sort of X-force behind this whole thing. Because, of course, if you look at the funding of the environmental movement, you find people like Ted Turner. You find many of our great tax-exempt foundations. You find even many of our great corporations contributing to this. You find Ben and Jerry's ice cream giving large sums of money to many of the most radical environmentalists. Until we begin asking, you know, certainly who is funding this, as long as we know the federal government's funding it. But then, of course, it's also being funded by certain people who seem to have a different worldview, a different agenda. But go ahead with your description. I think it's fascinating.
Well, you've described the third head of the beast is the funding sources that enable the litigation to go to the point where the government, basically the federal government.
Are you on a cell phone or a portable
phone? No, I am not on a cell phone, but I am on the phone whereby phone calls are coming in.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
I apologize for that. So once you've identified that, then what you have done is you have brought yourself to the point of realizing that when the pretext is given that we're just following the law, then you ask the next question, can the law be changed? And how do you do that short of litigation? Staying out of court. And the only way to get the Endangered Species Act reversed or its impact reversed is to reverse the law itself.
Right.
To amend it or to revoke it.
All right. Now, how then are you working with some of the people down there who have been traumatized and attacked using this law? Then you're working then through the political sphere to try to repeal the Endangered Species Act, which was really a passed. You know, initially they sold that, well, just we've got to do something to protect the bald eagle. And I don't think that there's probably 1 in 100 of the congressmen who voted for that legislation who had any idea it was going to be used to massively expand federal control over the lives of the people. In addition to that, lay the groundwork for the catastrophe in our forests, the forest fires, all of the terrible things, cutting out the lumbering, the destruction of industries. I don't think Congress had any concept of what they were voting on. Do you?
I don't believe that there was any congressional intent of what it has become. And based on that theory, we have come up with and have proposed, and there are currently in various legislatures around the West now, pieces of legislation that build upon that theme.
All right, fine. So are you coordinating this effort?
Yes.
All right, fine. And so can you tell us a little bit more about it or what possibly people can do? Because I think that the average American realizes the insanity of what's happening, and yet they sort of have a feeling of helplessness. How did this come about without ever understanding that our concept of government came under the premise that all men were created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, and to secure these rights, then governments were constituted among men to be formed with the consent of the governed. And of course, what's happening is all these laws are coming in, and this really has nothing to do with the consent of the governed, or even many times our elected representatives. But people who sneak these bills through and then get the bureaucracy to change their meaning, and then they use them to oppress our people.
Well, let's just take one piece. Let's take two pieces of legislation. Let me discuss the Wolf one first. And I think that you'll see what we're trying to accomplish here. You take common sense and you apply the laws that apply to human beings vis-a-vis the Wolf Reintroduction Program. Namely, if you kill or maim a wolf, you're subject to prosecution under federal law for doing so. Even though the wolf is a free-roaming carnivorous predator, and that it is very foreseeable that, if not, that it has a propensity to threaten or inflict death upon a human being if it encounters it.
And if not on human beings, certainly on the livestock and, on other animals.
Well, and, you know, there have been human beings, it's my understanding, that have been attacked, but there's such qualifications on what constitutes an attack under their guidelines, that it is amazing. But we've introduced legislation that has taken that principle of prosecuting human beings and saying, well, okay, if you reintroduce the wolf, that's fine, but assume the responsibility for monitoring and supervising that wolf and be subject to prosecution if your wolf kills or maims a human being.
Oh, I think that's a wonderful, wonderful approach to the problem.
And the equities of it are ironic. You know, in the legislation we say if your wolf wanders off of the reservation, off of the federal lands, it will be found in trespass and it will be removed.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Cliff Nicklaus.
Sure.
Well, our guest this evening is Cliff Nicklaus, and we're talking about, of course, his effort and the efforts of other people to try to circumvent this totally ridiculous law that has been enacted as part of the attack on Western civilization. And those of you who have not read our material on sustainable development or heard our interviews with Joan Vian or Joan Paris or Jeannie Sodeman or have certainly gone into the background of this entire globalist movement to destroy Western civilization. You really have to understand that these people know what they're doing, they just don't want the people to, but this sounds like a great idea. In other words, these people will be liable for what their wolves do?
Under state law. If you release a dangerous instrumentality within a state, then stand liable for your responsibility to safeguard those people from attack.
Oh, and of course, and I'm sure that if you got before a jury with that law, why, of course, a lot of these people from the federal government and other people who are releasing these dangerous animals here in, you know, in California, they're allowing the mountain lions to roam free. They really want to sort of put the people in the cages. What they want to do is, of course, get us away from the beautiful and wilderness areas, make it unsafe for us by putting in predatory animals. And people are actually killed by mountain lions. Now, who would you actually bring the suit against? Would you bring it against the environmentalists? Would you bring it against the government? Who would you, the federal government or the federal officials who introduce these predatory animals?
This draft legislation says any individual that is participates or assists in the release of a carnivorous predator within the state will do two things. He will file a DNA sample, a certified DNA sample with the state of that wolf. And coupled with that DNA sample, he will sign a certificate of responsibility.
Well, now, what I feel a lot of this being done by the government officials under this guise, under the color of their carrying out their assignment from the federal government. How, and wouldn't many of the people be protected by federal laws? Because we have laws, it doesn't matter what you do when you're a federal official, you can't be sued.
Well, you know, and that is one of the purposes, is to have that debate. Because who is going to argue that if their instrumentality that they have released has killed a person, that they're shielded from responsibility when they have told those people it won't happen? You follow?
I follow. The thing is, I just hope and pray that you're going to be able to get something like that through. Certainly, the people who are releasing those predators know that they're endangering people, and they don't care.
No, they're asserting or warranting exactly the opposite, that wolves don't attack people. And when a wolf attacks a livestock, they're denying it or saying you have lack of proof, and thus the DNA sample that can immediately identify what animal attacked that livestock or attacked that human being. And it is nothing more than the state government asserting its right to protect the general welfare of its citizens, the health and welfare of its citizens. And who can say that to do that is unconstitutional? If what the people releasing the wolf are saying is true, this law poses no problem. If, on the other hand, what they're telling people when they release the wolf is not true, then they should stand responsible for their actions, especially if it injures or kills a human being.
And, of course, they are certainly trying to reintroduce the grizzly bears into many areas that they have not existed in for literally centuries. And certainly nobody would question that a grizzly will not many times attack human beings.
Right. And this law sets out certain standards. It will be unlawful for a wolf at any time to be located anywhere other than on the federal land.
Well,
that's their duty.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. And of course, the thing is, once again, this is going to get into this battle between the state and the federal government. Now, initially, all power was with the state government, and you go back and read the Federalist Papers, the power of the central government was to be limited and defined. The power of the state government was to be literally unlimited and ill-defined in all matters having to do with life, liberty, and property were to be taken care of at the state level. It is this usurpation of power and authority, unconstitutional and illegal by the federal government and federal bureaucrats, that's got us into the mess we are today.
Well, and that notion has long been abandoned for decades. And I feel it's unconstitutional. That's my personal belief. But nevertheless, the Constitution has little viability today anyway, so far as I can tell.
Well, maybe what we need to do is re-educate the American people and about what the Constitution's about. Because the Constitution's never been repealed. We have a lot of people who swear an oath when they enter office. They swear to uphold the Constitution and to defend it against all enemies, public and private. and of course, or I should say foreign and domestic. And many of those people who swear that oath are domestic enemies of our Constitution. And maybe we better start talking about that. But of course, people wouldn't even know what we're talking about because they've forgotten what the Constitution was all about, or maybe they were never told about it. And one of the big problems is they don't teach the truth about our Constitution in our schools or in our high schools or in our colleges or even in our law schools. In fact, I have a friend of mine who recently has interviewed over 100 lawyers. And of the 100 lawyers, only 2 of them ever studied the Constitution itself in law school. All they did was study case law, what other people said about the Constitution.
Many people are shocked when they read it to see things they never knew were there. But let me just go through this, and you tell me which of these laws is constitutional. 1, it should be unlawful for a wolf at any time to injure or kill a human being in the state.
Well, I think that's a great law. Of course, the people are going to say, "Well, we didn't tell the wolf what to do." You know, they did that on. We're not responsible. We may have put the wolf there, but we're not responsible. And yet, of course, if your dog kills somebody and you know it's a vicious dog, you can be held guilty and sent to prison.
If I put a lion in my backyard and don't monitor or supervise it, and it kills my neighbor, is that manslaughter?
It sure is, and I think it's a great. I'm really intrigued by your idea. I think it's a great idea.
It's to generate debate.
Right.
It is to re-educate people what the Constitution is about, and what common sense is about, and how absurd the endangered species, the consequences have become. Now we've got another piece of legislation for the same purpose in a different area. And that's the watershed restoration legislation that's being carried in several states this year. And that says we are in a drought, our aquifers, our reservoirs, and our rivers are going dry, and yet we maintain watersheds with billions of excess trees that are absorbing and evaporating that water for no legitimate purpose. And it absorbs that water until the point that catastrophic fires take it entirely out.
And I think
all under the guise of the Endangered Species Act.
Now, I think that this is really a fascinating point. In fact, I'd never even thought of that until you pointed out the amount of water that a tree consumes through its root structure. And that water, of course, then goes into the tree and then, of course, is given off on, through the branches and the needles or leaves. And then, of course, that water is lost forever. Otherwise, if it were not taken up by the tree, why, it would run down and go into a reservoir and could be stored for human consumption. Is that the basic theme?
It's like I said, I tell people, a raindrop only has 3 choices. Evaporate, absorb into the ground, or run downhill. Anything that causes evaporation denies it from absorbing into the ground or running downhill. If it's not doing one of those 2 things, it's not filling rivers, it's not filling reservoirs, and it's not filling aquifers.
And so what you want to do really is go in and thin out these forests, get so many of the excess trees out of there so that there will be more water for human consumption and, of course, to prevent the forest fires, which are a direct result of what's going on. Is that correct?
Yes. And the moment you do this, the Endangered Species Act is invoked to stop you from doing this, saying you are injuring a habitat of, say, an owl or some other species that they happen to find there, to prevent you from thinning the forest, but at the same time, those...
I'm going to have to interrupt you. We'll be back in just a moment here with Jeff Nicholson. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we certainly hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do on a regular basis, 5 hours every day, and 5 hours on radio, 5 hours on the Internet, 3 hours on satellite, and 2 hours on the short wave. But it's an expensive proposition, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we spread our information out across America. from sea to shining sea. Well, we're going to get back to our special guest this evening. His name is Mr. Cliff Nichols, and he is, of course, telling us about his plan to begin introducing legislation in that will try to bring some sanity to the insanity that's taking place right now. Go ahead, Cliff, and pick up the story.
Well, you have 190 million acres in the federal forest that Gail Martin and others have estimated in a range have 500 to 1,000 excess trees per acre.
Now, of course, those excess trees really, they stifle the growth of the other trees. Don't trees do a lot better when they're thin, just exactly as a rose does better when it's pruned, or a grapevine? If you don't prune a grapevine, why, it just doesn't grow properly. And really, thinner the forest is so important, they get maximum light and, of course, maximum growth.
And the people fail to connect the connection between those trees, which in the worst drought in decades remain green. They don't connect why those trees are remaining green on the federal forest, and at the same time the river is going dry. In Albuquerque we have a prime example where they're trying to take the water to save a minnow, an endangered minnow, which, by the way, in the zoo there are millions of them, but in the habitat of the Rio Grande, they're listed as endangered. So they're taking Albuquerque's water away from Albuquerque for the purpose of getting it to these minnows. At the same time, Albuquerque, that is dependent on the Rio Grande and on the aquifer, its aquifer is also depleting. So what the response is the government of Albuquerque is telling people, you can't grow certain types of grass anymore. You have to put in no flush toilets. You can't put in certain types of greenery around your home. And if you water during certain days when we tell you not to, you're going to get a ticket. The people of Albuquerque need to understand that the Endangered Species Act that has prevented a thinning of the watersheds above Albuquerque have caused, in part, the depletion of the aquifer and the lowering of the river. And the thinning, were it to occur, would increase the total supply in the state as opposed to having to allocate or conserve a reduced supply.
Well, you know, I think that what most people really don't understand, this is an agenda. We actually have it. It's called the World Bank Water Policy. And the whole idea is we're going to control the population by controlling the water. And if we can create water shortages, then we will have a justification for the control of the lives of the people. And there really are people who have a different worldview than you and I would, Cliff. They want to control us because they think they know what's best. They think that they can create a utopia without God. Of course, they want to bring the kingdom of heaven to earth, but without a God. And of course, to do that, they have to create problems. And when they create the problem, then of course they come up with a solution. And there's no problem facing the environment today that a new series of federal laws restricting freedom can't be used to address. But in many times, they will intentionally create these problems. For instance, they will block the building of dams and efforts to store water, and then they will complain about the saltwater intrusion in areas close to the ocean. And of course, as you're pointing out here with the forest, they're preventing thinning of the forest so that the water is taken up by the tree and evaporates. But they complain there's no water, so we're going to have to restrict watering, restrict the people, restrict how many times they flush the toilet, and ultimately, eventually, restrict the number of people.
Now, if you look at federal forests that have, clearly no one debates, there are billions of excess trees, and you realize that each single tree consumes from 10 to 200 gallons a day.
I think that's an amazing figure, 10 to 200 gallons of water a day.
Depending on size and age. Times the billions of trees is anywhere from a lower estimate of, let's just say, 10 billion gallons a day to hundreds of billions of gallons a day that are being deprived from the downstream source.
Well, now, of course, how many billions of gallons do we need so there'd be plenty of water for the people?
Billions more than you have now cannot hurt under any circumstance.
Amen to that, of course.
Especially in this drought. Now, the same people that are attacking me, they don't attack the theory, and they don't attack the science. What they say is, I am anti-growth, or I am pro-lumbering. Those are the only attacks, but I am neither. I am not. I don't represent lumber people. I don't represent developers. But that reveals their agenda to me, and that is, those are the things they're against.
Well, I think even more than that, anybody that comes out with a logical approach to what's going on is immediately attacked and vilified and demonized and marginalized, because this is all they have. They don't have any science on their side. All they have, is this desire to disrupt society. And so what they're going to do, and I'm sure you've had to have pretty broad shoulders to stand up against this attack, but this is standard operating procedure. It is used all across America, not only in the environmental movement, but anybody who stands up for anything that has any logic or sense to it today.
Anybody who accuses me of being pro-productive use of natural resources has not done anything to impact my incentives.
Well, of course, I hope you are pro-responsible use of natural resources. I believe that's why they were put there, and they certainly should be used responsibly. The thing is, they want basically to cut off all use of natural resources under this guise of sustainable development, but this is simply a cleverly cloaked effort, an attack on Western civilization.
Now, can I point out, since you mentioned Mr. Turner...
Right. You mean Ted, our friend Ted. They call him the Mouth from the South.
I understand. I have not met the man. However, I would point this out. The very people that would prevent the state from cleaning up the watersheds that they need so desperately for their municipalities and their agriculture are the very same people that it within the same week will come out in another article about Ted Turner's ranches and praise him for thinning his forests, increasing the percolation into the streams and rivers and aquifers, and at the same time increasing the forage available to elk and deer.
Well, of course, you understand that Mr. Turner is one of the largest landholders in the country. He is indeed one of the major financiers, not only the environmental movement, but the radical environmentalists and the environmental terrorists. And, of course, he has good connections with people within the media. And it is the media and the environmentalists and people like Mr. Turner who are creating the problems for the rest of us. He wants everybody's property regulated, except, of course, Ted Turner's property. Let's go to Jeannie, who's calling in here. And Jeannie is pretty much of an expert on this. She spends a lot of time studying it. Hi, Jeannie. Do you have any questions or comments?
Well, this is a great program.
Well, of course, all of our programs are great. You know that.
Especially how much water a tree takes up. And it's interesting because 2 days ago I was reading in our local newspaper, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, in Santa Cruz County, regarding a biologist report for the SoCal Creek Water District. And it was on stream restoration. And the biologist report said they want to plant large trees near the streams. And I says, uh-oh. So this fits right in.
Yeah, of course, how else are we going to create the water shortage? I mean, here in Santa Cruz, we've got abundant water. And the only reason we have any shortages at all is because they're all created.
Yes.
Now, the very same environmental group that brought the suit on the Silvery Minnow in Albuquerque has also been given a grant to plant trees along the Rio Grande.
Right.
Does Cliff have a website?
You have a website. How can Jeannie get in touch with you?
I don't, but I'm willing to give you my office number if you would like to talk to me later. That would be 505-243-4682. A website is in development.
All right, fine. Well, I think your information is so vitally important. And for your information, Cliff, why Jeannie is certainly one of the world's leading experts on this whole issue. And she speaks very, very frequently on our programs in reference to it. Anything else you want to say, Jeannie?
No, thank you very much.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you. Let's go to Mike calling in here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. Given the amount of the amount of water trees consume each day, I think we should cut more trees.
That's a logical approach, and in that you would agree with Ted Turner.
Yeah,
that is what Ted Turner is doing on his property.
Yeah, speaking of Ted Turner, this is a little bit of an aside. The much acclaimed within the Christian community, Gods and Generals, this movie that's coming out now. Last night on 60 Minutes, it was revealed that Ted Turner is the one who bankrolled that movie.
And, of course, the interesting thing about that, Mike, and I know a little bit about it, this is a powerful, powerful Christian presentation. And it apparently, it really brings out a tremendous amount about the gospel and about the importance of God to the men who fought in the Civil War. And there were many people who were very, very concerned that Ted Turner would, intervene in the final analysis, the final cutting, and insist that they remove some of the strong religious connotations, and he didn't. To his credit, and Ted's not one of my favorite people, but he did say, you go ahead, you make this film the way you want to. Apparently, it's one of the greatest films ever made, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Well, I'm waiting to see it myself with a critical eye.
All right, fine, but I think you may be surprised, because I know people who are pretty smart who've already seen the film, and they say it is one of the greatest films of all time.
Ted Baer is one of those, and in the past his reviews have been very questionable.
All right, well, I would disagree with you, but anything else you'd like to say, Mike?
The reason I called in the first place.
Okay, fine.
I wanted to see a discussion in this program of the biosphere reserves, which I think is very close to the topic. When you talk about the wild animals, is your guest familiar with the core reserves, the buffer zones, and the populated areas?
I think you're talking about the concepts laid out in the Biodiversity Treaty, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have seen the theory, I've seen the maps.
Yeah, the maps. Okay. So in those maps, you have red zones where no people are allowed. No human beings can get in there to disrupt natural wildlife, etc.
That is my understanding, that there is a goal to achieve that.
Right. And so then you have yellow zones where some people are allowed to transgress upon the wildlife that habitate there.
That's the buffer zones, right.
Yeah. And then you have green zones where people like you and I can have our lives, so to speak. My contention is that the core reserves are really areas that are, well, when you look at the maps, you realize that all the very best real estate in the world is in these red zones at the core reserve. And it really seems to me that, given the overall view of what's going on, there actually will be people allowed there, and those will be the Ted Turners and the Rockefellers and the George Soros types, you name it and what have you.
They're the ones who are financing this thing, whole thing, Mike, and I think you're absolutely right.
What I'm suggesting is a feudal system where these will be their little kingdoms. The buffer zones will be their moats, and out here in the hinterlands will be the servant class.
Now the feudal serfs, you're right. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Transformation of society that you referred to several times, well, the destruction of Western civilization. Most people who are for the environmental movement think that there is an enlightenment going on. That we talk about it as destruction of Western civilization, but they talk about it as a transformation. where people will be enlightened and there will be a new spirituality. But my contention is simply that we simply have the Marxist agenda of an aristocracy and a proletariat, and we in the servant class will be stuck out here. There will be as many of us as they want us to be, and we will be doing what they want us to do.
Okay, let's get Cliff's response. Thanks so much for your remarks, Mike. Very well put. How would you respond to what Mike was saying?
What I would respond is I do believe a lot of environmentalists have a notion of what they think would be good, but I do believe that that's a luxury afforded somebody who is not dependent on living off of the resources.
Right.
They are in an indirect sense, but they don't see it any more than the watershed affects what they can grow in their lawn. But they do have what would be the voting block. And unless you can bring what is happening on the resources to their level of consciousness in the cities, you will never amend these laws. But one of the keys that has been found over the years is that more than the laws, politicians love their jobs. And if you can make an issue to the voting bloc that if they support these laws that are doing these and causing the pain, like the deprivation of Albuquerque's water, then you have people rising up and saying, if you're for that, we don't want you. And that is what gets their attention.
I think it's well put on. I think you've got a great strategy. I'm all in favor of it. I think that this is an idea that will fly, because you have to, of course, get to where the rubber meets the road. You have to get to what affects people. And certainly when they don't have water, it affects them. And then, of course, maybe they may begin to listen to you, as you point out, the fact that the problem that is affecting them so deeply is not accidental. It's been created.
Well, and also, if you pose the question in the correct way and ask the politician, are you opposed to a law that is intended to protect the lives of your state citizens?
Oh, I think that's great, you know, and if the wolf you put in there hurts anybody, it's sort of like that old idea in the Merchant of Venice, Shakespeare's The Merchant of Venice, you can have the pound of flesh, but if you shed one drop of blood, why, of course, you'll go to prison for the rest of your life. And of course, that took care of Shylock pretty well. Maybe what we need to do is find other means of taking care of the modern-day Shylock.
Well, another way of posing the question to the politician would be, are you going to take away my water or fine me or arrest me for using water when you're not willing to do what's necessary to increase the supply of water available to us?
Right, and I think, of course, to let the public know that the politicians are responsible for the problems because they've allowed it to happen.
Yes. And put them in a position where they can't say no, because common sense to the average person dictates that they agree with the concept you're putting before them. And that is the intent, in part, of the legislation being introduced, is to educate people of the absurdities that we have obtained through the Endangered Species Act and other laws similar to it.
Well, I'm in total agreement with everything you're doing, and I certainly applaud your efforts. What are your parting thoughts? We've got about 2 minutes now before we have to turn into pumpkins. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight, Cliff?
My parting thoughts is, as you drive through the forest, and we're in the longest drought in American history, and you see nothing but green trees other than those trees that are disease-ridden, ask what is keeping them green. And ask if what's keeping them green is depriving you of the water and the politicians telling you, you have to conserve because we're not going to cut those trees down. And when you ask those questions, ask also, what is it about the Endangered Species Act that needs changing to allow it to stop being abused?
And, you know, one of the other things that really is amazing to me is that these people of great wealth many times even the people who hold extensive forest land are financing this whole environmental movement. Because by taking other people's land out of production and the federal lands out of production, it increases the value of the lumber on their land. It increases the value of their land holdings.
Land is beautiful only if it's not yours.
Amen to that. Well, God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
God bless you.
And
thank you.
If you ever want to get on, again, just give me a call. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest has been Cliff Nichols. Lawyers out on the front lines trying to come up with solutions, but the major solution is to let the American people understand there is an agenda. And, of course, Western civilization,
Christian
civilization, is under attack today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time where I need to just briefly go over this whole idea of the limits of growth. And this was put forth by the Club of Rome, a group of very wealthy people over in Europe. Today, if you look at the Club of Rome, you'll find Gorbachev, the ubiquitous Gorbachev, the butcher of Afghanistan, there, the royal houses, the heads of the royal houses of Europe, many of the major industrialists and financiers of Europe are part of the Club of Rome. Now, they weren't back in 1971 when the book The Limits of Growth came out, but certainly Maurice Strong was part of it at that time. And the whole idea was, how will we destroy Western civilization? Well, let's come up with a problem. And, of course, why we might run out of natural resources. So what we need to do is come up with a means of avoiding running out of natural resources. We have to limit the use of natural resources. And who is it who is using the natural resources? Why, it's human beings. So we've just got too many people in the world that are using too many natural resources. There is a limit to the growth of society, and we are going to have to, of course, restructure society along these lines. And, of course, it was at that point that tremendous impetus came forward for population control. And it's really working very successfully. The population increase is increasing dramatically, or the population growth has decreased significantly. And, of course, as we look throughout the world, we find a rapid decline in the fertility rates. People are having fewer and fewer children. It's estimated that the world population will increase to about 8 billion, 8.5 billion, and then it'll start to drop. And it will drop, and it will drop, and it will drop. And once you start getting population falling and falling precipitously, why, pretty soon, why, you really can't change that around. In Russia today, the country's dying off. They have a little over 1.1 children per family. It takes at least 2.1 children per family. In Russia today, they're pleading with people actually not to have abortions, to have more children, because they know that Russia as a society is doomed. In fact, the Greek Orthodox Church there is controlled by the KGB. The chief priest is a member of the KGB. They invited our good friend John Wilkie to come over there with the National Right to Life, an international Right to Life organization, to try to tell people how to convince the public they had to have children and stop having abortions. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this program right here at Radio Liberty, and of course we'll be bidding adieu to our listeners in the North. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course this is the time I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported. We're really dependent on those of you who listen to our programs regularly to help us as we gradually expand our outreach across America. And we are really so fortunate to have the outreach that we do at the present time. And as you know, we spend 5 hours a day on various networks, and we talk to people at the American Christian Network, on the Sunshine Network, on the American Information Network, on the Genesis Network, on the Radio Liberty Network. I wish we were talking to 100 times as many people as we are, but at least we're a voice. We may be a small voice, but we have access to some of the smartest people in the country. President parties accepted here, but we have access to people like Jeannie Soderman, who called in this evening, and certainly Joan Paris, others who are real experts in the field of environmentalism, and of course understand that behind this whole environmental movement are spiritual forces, because this is basically a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological environmental battlefield. Behind this whole movement towards the control of the environment is the effort, of course, to change the world and to destroy not only Christian civilization, I should say not only Western civilization, but Christian civilization. That's really what the attack is about. Western civilization was built upon the Judeo-Christian ethic and came out, of course, of the, as we know it today, came out of the Renaissance and the Reformation. And this is to be destroyed. And if any of you have any question, would really like to see a fictionalized approach to this, you need to get Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, because as he says in the foreword to that book, there's information here the government doesn't want you to know. And who is he talking about in the government? He's talking about the small little clique of people who control both political parties and have a different worldview. They march to a different drumbeat. They hear a different trumpet. They dream a different dream. They worship a different God. And that's what we're really up against. There really are people out there who are part of a conspiracy against the God of the Bible. Well, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'd love to have you join, become a member of the Radio Liberty family, and help us as this epic struggle we're involved in. If you'd like to subscribe to our newsletter, you can call us again at that number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You really need to read our Sustainable Development Syllabus and our Millennium Syllabus and minutes of the material we've amassed and put together to really be able to understand what we're talking about and what the real plan is really all about. If you'd like to get one of our newsletters, and we'd be glad to send you a catalog, we'll send it to you free of charge. Give us a call at that number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. I can certainly recommend our October newsletter, Kristen Breitweiser's testimony before the Senate Select Committee, where she talked about what really happened on September 11th, a story that you've never heard if you, of course, read the controlled media or listen to the controlled television networks. But Kristen Breitweiser's testimony was really so pointed, so revealing, and yet, of course, so few people actually heard it. And, of course, even fewer people ever read about it because it was systematically controlled and suppressed by the controlled media here in the United States. So if you'd like to get a copy of Kristen Breitweiser's testimony on the 18th of September of last year before the Senate Intelligence Committee, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then pray for America. Pray for revival in America, because if American people don't turn back to God, God is going to turn his back on America forever. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for our leaders. We ask you to pray for our ministers, but we also ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, and of course, until tomorrow at the same time when we'll be back with you, this is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, well, tonight we have with us a very, very good friend. His name is Jack McClam, and Jack was the most highly decorated police officer in the history of Phoenix when he was there. And, of course, before he was over, he was the most frequently fired police officer because Jack made a mistake. He read the Constitution. He realized that sometimes police officers were required, instructed not to obey the law of our land. It was all expedient. We've got to get the bad guys, and if we have to violate the Constitution, so what? I mean, we've got to get our job done. And, of course, that's the same mentality that existed in Hitler's Germany. This is what the Gestapo did. This is what the members of the SS did. It was all for the betterment of society. And I don't know how many of you have seen that wonderful, wonderful movie. It was called Judgment at Nuremberg. And it had Spencer Tracy and Burt Lancaster. And Burt Lancaster was the German judge who was on trial at Nuremberg. And Spencer Tracy was the head of the American delegation. And, of course, the German judge justified what they did, the violation of what they knew was the law because it was done for the greater good. And, of course, at the end of the movie, when he's been condemned, he asked to see Spencer Tracy to try to explain to him, you know, certainly we're going to be punished for what we did, but you have to understand that it was to help Germany. We believed in Germany. We had to do something, you know, for the good of the state. And, of course, Spencer Tracy's reply, you know, once you violated the law the first time, why, of course, you lost your right to be a judge. Important message, and, of course, it carries over to what's happening with our police today. And we've got a lot of wonderful people in the police force, but there are many times people within the structure of our court system, they want to get convictions. It doesn't matter whether the person's guilty or innocent. They're going to get a conviction on this, and they're going to pile, you know, the 500 years of, you know, if you don't give us a guilty plea and agree to go to jail for 6 months, you'll spend 500 years in prison. Well, that is not a way. The person's either guilty or innocent. You don't send them to jail for 500 years when, of course, all you really want is a minor conviction, and many times people will plead guilty to a crime they didn't commit just out of fear of the judicial system that has lost its vision based upon what's right and wrong and has become totally expedient. How are you tonight, Jack? Jack, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Dr. Stan, it's good to be with you tonight.
Well, it's good to have you with us again. And Jack, of course, now, of course, publishes the Aid and Abet newsletter, and he's with a group, he is the group, that's trying to educate police officers and the military about our Constitution and about their oath to support our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And if you love America, you better learn about our Constitution and what's happening to it. So tell us what's happening, Jack.
Well, we're very excited, Stan. We're spending more hours a day talking to our brothers and sisters in uniform. We've never had a greater time with communication with our brothers and sisters in uniform around the nation and around many of the nations that they've been sent off into. We receive mail and email all the time from other nations. And we're excited because a lot of these brothers and sisters are waking up today and actually seeing the negatives involved in their activities today that you have been talking to them about and I've been talking to them about, Stan, and others for many, many years.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Jack McClam.
Perfect.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Jack McClam, and he's up there in Idaho, Kamiai, Idaho. And, of course, this is where Aid and Abet Newsletter is published. And of course, he is in contact with people within the military, people who are within the police force, and they're beginning to understand that there seems to be another agenda behind the scenes, that many times the people in positions of power really don't believe in the Constitution that they've sworn to uphold. They seem to be marching to a different drumbeat. They seem to be dreaming a different dream and using our military to pursue their political agenda. Would that be a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement, brother. That's right. It's amazing today that I've been at this, and our police and military organization has been at it about 21 years, and we've never had such a tremendous response as we have today. But, brother, I think it's because, as the old joke goes, there's so much writing on the wall fell down. You know, many people can see it today where they couldn't see it even 5 years ago, what's going on.
Well, I think many people in the military know that this war going into Iraq is totally contrived. They're using propaganda. I mean, they're telling us all sorts of things. How do we know whether it's true or not? Would we expect that the same administration, because this is the second Bush administration, the first Bush administration lied to us about the background of the first Gulf War, about the atrocities that were committed by the Iraqi troops. So much of this was called contrived. Even why, of course, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, and then, of course, after we were within 60 miles of Kuwait, our government intentionally left him in power, uses all sorts of rationale. Well, if he's really as evil as they said he was at that time, and he's still as evil as they say he is now, why did we leave him in power? And I think people are beginning to ask these searching questions, questions that demand an answer.
That's right, brother. And it's on the hearts and lips and on the minds of our brothers and sisters in uniform today like never before. And that keeps us busy about 15, 16 hours a day here. And we're always behind trying to answer letters from these colleagues of ours that are so troubled today. You know, I don't know if I told you last time I was here, but one brother had a copy of our Operation Vampire Killer 2000 in his Foot Locker. And, you know, Operation Vampire Killer is a manual for police and soldiers that explains what this New World Order, world conspiracy is all about. And he was almost court-martialed for just having that in his Foot Locker.
So much for freedom of the press. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Jack Lamb, and we'll tell you about Operation Vampire Killer 2000. Well, this is Arthur Stan, and our guest this evening is Jack McClam. And of course, Jack has written something called Vampire Killer, Operation Vampire Killer 2000. And you what, have got about 1.25 million copies of that out across America?
That's right, brother, to 1.5 million somewhere. About 3 years ago, we reached 1.25 million, so we just lost count now.
All right, and of course, and people are copying this, and basically it's trying to explain to the military and to the police what's really going on behind the scenes. And of course, my understanding that in some military units, this is a court-martialable offense to actually have a copy of this. Well, I thought we had freedom of the press here. Well, I suppose in the military they can say, as far as military discipline, why, of course, we can't allow people reading subversive material, but this is not subversive material. It's just talking about the Constitution and about these people who are trying to abrogate our Constitution and take away our freedom.
Yes, brother, and I just pulled out a letter that we received just recently from a soldier. I've got about 4 paragraphs here. When you get the time, I'd like to read that.
Well, we got all the time in the world. The timekeeper says go ahead. So
yeah, here's one of our soldiers that wrote to us recently. It says, and this is just excerpts out of his letter, which was quite lengthy, but it says here, "It is obvious now that we are not here for peacekeeping. We are here to change these people's government system to one of total humanism and socialism and see that their nation does not resist their entry into the world system under the UN. And he says, shades of Serbia. And then he says, we're not here for any purpose that serves or protects our nation or our countrymen. We're here serving as a conquering army for those promoting the world government system. This brother is really in tune with what's going on today. But he's so depressed in his letter. He says, I have some buds who are just as upset as me about serving as a hammer for this group of Marxist maniacs. So much death and destruction here against the good people of, and we blank that out so that they can't find who this young soldier is. And he says it breaks our hearts and spirit. The people in the U.S. would be shocked to see what we're doing here and what we're supporting. Due to the controlled news there, there's no way for us to get the story out. What we need is for our fellow Americans to ask their politicians, what are we, their sons and daughters, doing here risking our lives and supporting this ungodly, un-American world program?
Well, you know, basically, there is a program, and it's called, it's put out by an organization headed by people, headed by William Crystal and a number of people whose loyalty is really not to our America, but to this internationalist dream and internationalist goal. And of course, what's really frightening is they have many of the Christian leaders in this organization, and they've recently come out with a publication called Rebuilding America's Defenses. It came out in, I think, September 2000. And in that, they talk about enforcing the Pax Americana, where America will dominate the world. And they even talk about how we're not going to be able to get a lot of this done unless there is a catastrophic and climactic event like another Pearl Harbor. That was written in September of 2000, and just a year later, we had a cataclysmic and catastrophic event they sought that did, of course, certainly crystallize this whole idea of America dominating the world. Today, according to Congressman Ron Paul, we have troops in more and larger or smaller numbers stationed in 140 nations throughout the world. Now, at its strongest point, Rome never was able to dominate the world the way we're dominating the world. Even when Rome was at its maximum, there still was a Persian Empire, there was a Chinese Empire. Rome controlled a good deal of the world, but not the whole world. But today, with 180 nations, America has troops stationed in 140 of them. What does that suggest to you today? That are we really, of course, defending America, or are we projecting the power of the corporate elite throughout the world? And that, I think, is a question that every citizen and every member of our armed forces should begin asking.
Yes, that's true, brother. And it's sad to read these letters, because if any of these officers or soldiers don't obey orders, of course, they're in deep trouble. And so they write to us and tell us about the immoral things that they've participated in, and even unconstitutional or unlawful at times. And they ask us, what are they supposed to do? This one young guy here asked us to, the one I'm looking at now, this is a police officer, though, Sergeant Benjamin. He says, I was relieved of duty when I stood up and stated that I had read a copy of Operation Vampire Killer 2000. It's amazing that there's nothing in the OVK but patriotic information and asking us to uphold our oaths and not accept any unlawful, unconstitutional, or immoral orders. He says, it's now time for me to fight for what is right. Would you assist me in finding a good attorney? We get these letters all the time from officers and soldiers that are trying to do what's right, brother, but and we can't find attorneys for them. You know, if they were Marxists or socialists and helping to destroy America, why, the ACLU alone has something like 1,500 attorneys, something like that, that work for them for free, pro bono, to help destroy America. But you know, I know five attorneys, brother, that we contact to try to take some of these cases. Where are our good attorneys, the ones that love liberty and freedom, that will work pro bono on these cases? We just don't have them.
Well, I think that is a sad commentary on the status of the legal profession today. Now, we do have some good lawyers. Of course, they will participate in certain cases having to do with persecution of Christians. But how about persecution of police officers and military who are dedicated to upholding the Constitution? And I think what the real problem is, Jack, is that most people do not understand that the Constitution was based upon biblical concepts. And of course, we once had a godly heritage here. We were once known as a Christian nation throughout the world. And you know, today, across our land, you will never find people who would dare get up and say we were once a great Christian nation. In fact, anybody who says that will immediately be attacked and vilified and demonized and marginalized because of the power of the media and their hatred of America and its Christian legacy.
Yes, very true. You know, we I just love to read some of the quotes of some of our founders. You know, old James Madison, his quote just hit it right on the nail when he said, and I think I can quote it verbatim, "We have staked the whole future of American civilization not upon the power of government, far from it." He said, "We have staked the future upon the capacity for each and all of us to govern ourselves, to sustain ourselves according to the Ten Commandments of God." I mean, my goodness, if a politician said that today, they'd probably stone him.
Well, you know, it's so interesting,
they would
Jack.
Probably stone him.
You know, if you heard the President's State of the Union message, why, he concluded that message, you know, asking God to bless America.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing that disturbs me is, now, the President is a government employee. This was a government function. But it's all right for the President to invoke the name of God and to ask for his blessing. But if a school teacher in a schoolroom were to stand up and mention God and ask for his blessing on the school or the students, why, of course, they would lose their job. What's the difference? Why is it that they want to, of course, keep mention of God out of our schools, but it's all right for the President to mention it, or for the Senate to start its sessions each day when the choir comes in and says, you know, God save the United States and this noble court, words to that effect. The Supreme Court knows, of course, that God is an important part of our laws. It is simply that their purpose, at least certain members of the majority of the court, to destroy the Christian heritage of this nation.
Well, I, being facetious, we around here, our police officers and soldiers, think that these politicians we have today are political Christians, and they say these things and nobody takes issue with them because their brothers and sisters in their Congress and Senate and so forth know they're not telling the truth. They know they're just conning everybody. And that's the same with a president that's a member of the Skull and Bones and is head of putting our nation under this ungodly Antichrist world government United Nations system. I mean, they know he's not telling the truth when he says those things, because no person could serve God and serve this United Nation tyranny over the land. And brother and I, we think it's just that they know he's not being honest, so they kind of snicker when he says those things.
Well, you know, it's really so interesting. It reminds me of a friend of mine who many years ago, he was the mayor of Santa Cruz, and he as the mayor of Santa Cruz, he was invited back to the presidential prayer breakfast, and this was when Richard Nixon was in the White House, and he commented that Richard Nixon got up and gave this wonderful, glorious prayer, and then about 2 weeks or 3 weeks later, why, they released the Nixon tapes, you know, that had been recorded in the Oval Office. And every other word was, you know, a swear word. I wouldn't even want to mention what they were here, but vile, I mean, filthy language.
Yeah,
and this
right.
man was no more a Christian, but he could talk the talk, but he certainly didn't walk the walk.
That's right. We call those political Christians, with 70% of the American people professing to be Christians. You know you got to be a Christian to win, so these old reprobates, they pick up the Bible and march out of church every Sunday waving the Bible for the media like Clinton did and his wife, and so that's what we should expect. Remember when Richard Nixon got in trouble, the globalists that put him in office knew that they had to bring forth a Christian, so here comes Jimmy Carter out of the woodwork, and we elected Jimmy Carter then.
We sure did, and of course, unfortunately, Jimmy Carter was the selection of the Trilateral Commission, and you can read the writings of Brzezinski. He will tell you he and David Rockefeller picked Jimmy Carter to become the president, and of course, he then toppled the Shah and turned Iran over to the Ayatollah Khomeini, just exactly as the Rockefellers want, financed Saddam Hussein, precipitated the Afghan war, you know, brought the Sandinista to power in Nicaragua. That was our Christian president. We'll be back here in just a moment with Jack McLam. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I say this, I'm an evangelical Christian, and I really believe the inherency of the scriptures, but unfortunately Jimmy Carter compromised his principles so he could be president, and he sold out to the Rockefeller and the elitists. He became a member of the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, part of this whole movement dedicated to the New World Order and the New World Religion, and maybe he doesn't even understand that, of course, the New World Order that they tend to bring in will be a new world order without God. Well, Jack, you know, of course, as you talk to these military people, and I'm sure you write to them, but, you know, they are trapped in a system that has been allowed to come about because of the apathy and the indifference of the American people. And I really, I tremble for my country when I reflect of the possible complications of this coming war. How do you feel about the fact we're going to war over there? We have to win this war within a month, or 2 months at the most, because, of course, in early April, why the temperature ordinarily goes up to 120 degrees there, and you can't very well fight a war. Our boys aren't prepared to fight a war like that. They would be, would be a terrible, terrible disadvantage fighting against people who are used to that sort of heat. And, of course, I fear that the Iraqis are going to force us to go in and fight within the towns themselves. I would hope that the Iraqi people would want to overthrow Saddam Hussein. I don't know how they're going to react. I don't know how the Iraqi military is going to react. But remember, when you are in the military, and if you surrender, why, many times your own people will kill you. This is the way that it is. And it's a matter of you fight or you get shot. And so, unfortunately, this is the reality of what we're up against. And then how many of them do feel and look upon America coming in as a return of the Crusaders? I don't know. What are your thoughts? Do you think it'll be an easy war? We'll be in and out of there as quickly as we were with the Gulf War, a hundred-hour war, 150 casualties? What are your thoughts?
Well, we've heard from a number since the president has given Saddam a year and a half now to prepare to go out as a great martyr for Islam, because they've been telling him they're going to kill him and they're going to bomb him out of his sneakers, and so they're giving him a year and a half to get ready for it now. So our soldiers are very nervous, because you don't usually tell them you're going to kill them for a year and a half and give them all that time to prepare. And also, we've got some Jewish soldiers writing to us, and they believe that Saddam has no choice now but to bomb Israel and kill a million Israelites over there, and then he'll be the greatest martyr. He'll die, of course, but he'll be the greatest martyr Islam ever had. And so what a horrible sacrifice. We have letters right here from captains and senior airmen and petty officers and gunnery sergeants, all about the same thing, about how stupid it is to go over there and bomb countries that haven't done anything to America, like Iraq, for example, and they just don't feel we ought to be over there doing these things, because they feel that America ought to be attacked by Iraq, or Colonel David Hackworth said, and another colonel on with him on Fox News, they said that they have no doubt it'll be a 20 to 30 year war that Bush is starting right now. And they listed the other nations, and this is really strange, because I've gotten letters from captains and majors who said the same thing as Colonel David Hackworth and this other Colonel Moore, I think it was, that was on with him that night. They said that we're then going to go to all these other Muslim nations after that, and they named about four or five other Muslim nations, and that's what our soldiers are saying at the higher levels, that's exactly what we're going to do.
You mean there's another agenda, and they just haven't bothered to tell the American people about it? But
yes.
I suppose that they'll be able to use their motion pictures and their television and their propaganda to get us prepared. In fact, there's a new book that's going to be out within the next week, written by the former ambassador to Saudi Arabia. The title is something like A Nation of Hate or something. It's very much against Saudi Arabia. Now, I don't think you could say anything bad enough about Saudi Arabia. It's a corrupt feudal dictatorship. And those are the good things you can say about it. But the thing is, why at this point are we suddenly having the former ambassador to Saudi Arabia write a book like that? It can be circulated across America. And I will tell you why. Because it has to do with the perception of the American people. We are being prepared for the coming war. It's sort of like the program we saw on Sunday in 60 Minutes. They had a doctor, a German doctor, who had been in North Korea, and the pictures of the starving children and you know, the emaciated people and the terrible conditions that the North Korean people live under. And that's absolutely true. And, of course, they pointed out that the president had said he loathes the leader of North Korea. And then, of course, Bush says, of course, he wants to negotiate with him. I mean, do you really think that a dictator of North Korea is going to negotiate with a man who says publicly he loathes him? But the trouble is that nobody ever points out who's feeding the army there to keep the dictator in power. Why, we are. We're sending massive food supplies, not going to the people, going to the military. Who's providing the oil to keep them warm and keep their what meager industries they have going? Why, we are. We're providing all for nothing. Oh, we're just such good people, so humanitarian, that we're keeping that ruthless dictator in power, the one that President loathes. And the American people are being psychologically prepared for the coming series of wars. This is what frightens me more than anything, that, of course, until the American people understand that they're playing games with their minds and they're preparing them to send their sons and daughters overseas to fight and die in a series of wars that have nothing to do with preserving America at home, but have everything to do with the New World Order and the New World Religion.
Yes, brother. We were kicking around our fellow soldiers and I the other day. We're trying to think of all the communist nations that could not have remained communist and could not have remained a threat to America unless we paid for it. Russia, we paid to hold communism up for 50 years over there. It would have fallen flat on its face if we hadn't sent them all the money.
Absolutely.
Now, Red China, we're sending them all of our industry and manufacturing over there, and so they become a nation so strong militarily that they're a tremendous threat to us, and we're paying for all of that. How many nations can you think of, brother, that we funded communism? There's never been a communist nation except the one in Cuba that we keep as a token and say that all communism is dead except over there in Cuba. And then we fund all the other communist nations to be sure they're a threat to us.
Well, I'm not so sure we don't fund the one in Cuba. If you go back and you study how Fidel Castro came to power, we brought him to power.
That's
true. For the skeptic, the book, The Fourth Floor, written by Ambassador Earl C. Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time of Fidel Castro took over. I interviewed him down in Palm Beach, Florida, back in 1980. And he let it be known, we brought Fidel Castro to power, and we knew he was a communist.
Yes.
And, of course, I asked him, well, was there any other alternative? He said, of course not. And that was the theme of his book, and that was the theme of our conversation. He never could understand why our State Department ordered him to tell President Batista to leave the next day. And it was, you get an order from America. It's sort of like getting an order from the mafia. You know, it's an offer you can't refuse. Batista left. Fidel Castro came to power. He didn't win the revolution. He didn't have the support of the people. They didn't want a communist dictator. In fact, they believed he was an anti-communist because we told him he was anti-communist. He was the George Washington of Cuba. He was the Abraham Lincoln of the revolution. He was not. He was a lifelong communist. We knew it. We brought him to power. And I think that he never would have maintained and been able to stay in power if we had not maintained him there. But we can't tell the American people that. They might begin to catch on how this whole thing works.
That's right, brother. Aristide, too, another communist we put in power.
There in Haiti, yes. And what really the tragedy of the people in Haiti today, starving, the rapes, but of course we never hear about that here in the United States. How we brought, they had a stable government there, and we destabilized it and brought this communist to power.
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to have to take a break here, and when we get back, of course, we'll invite your calls at the 1-800 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Right here at Radio Liberty, give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, our special guest this evening is Jack McClam. And Jack and I have been talking about, you know, where we're going, and of course, what this war is going to mean. Of course, I think it's going to be used to increase its government power over our lives, and of course, in the name of fighting those wicked terrorists. And yet, of course, anybody who's studying what's going on realizes that we've not made any effort to close our borders. You know, the borders are as wide open as they ever were, allowing the massive immigration of Mexican nationals and Oriental nationals, and of course now terrorists coming across our border, coming across with the coyotes and then fading into our community. But this goes back a long way. It goes back, of course, to the plan back in 1965. During the Vietnam War, when they repealed the McCarran Immigration Act, and of course they brought about this effort to create a multicultural society. Before that, we had about 50,000 Muslims in the United States. Today, of course, we have somewhere between 7 and 9 million. We don't know how many there are. We had, I think, probably 50 mosques. Now we have 2,000 of them. Of course, Saudi Arabia, our good friends in Saudi Arabia, are sending their radical clerics into our prisons and recruiting the blacks there into the Muslim religion, telling them, of course, Christianity is the white man religion. The white man puts you here. He wants to keep you down and oppress you. Become a black Muslim. And once they get into this mindset and praying five times a day, and I mean, there's a certain amount of idealism within the Muslim religion, certainly a moral structure, a structure that you can give your life to. It's not a true religion, but of course what it does, you know, it's just that you give to the poor and that you pray five times a day, and that you go to Mecca on a regular basis, and total immerse your life in this religion. It becomes a way of life for them. And they've recruited literally hundreds of thousands of black criminals now into the Muslim religion. And of course, this is being done with the full knowledge and support of the invisible government of the United States. A fifth column forming in America, almost as bad as the media. You know, I always say that the fourth estate has become a fifth column. We have another fifth column, too. And that is, of course, the radical Islam. This is, has nothing to do with moderate Islam. I mean, there are lots of moderate Muslims who are good people. They just want to live and be left alone. But now they, of course, increasingly becoming fearful and forced back from trying to integrate the community into their own areas because they're fearful with good reason in this country today. And I think as American boys begin dying overseas, killed in Muslim nations, there will be a backlash. And this, I believe, is being planned. I believe almost everything going on has been scripted. What are your thoughts, Jack?
That's correct. We're going to see with a number of these military people taking to the airwaves today and announcing that Iraq is just the beginning, that we're going to then go into other Arab nations over there and take them out, too.
Was this today that Colonel Hackworth was on?
No, that's been about a month and a half ago that he and another Colonel Moore was on with him on Fox News, and they were talking about all the nations we're going to go into next. And our letters here from our military people, they have been told that in their briefings, that Iraq is just the beginning. And for them to go on the air and tell the Muslims that this is the plan, you know what that's doing. I mean, that's making the Muslims say, well, they're going to try to knock all of us Muslims out, and our Arabic nations, we're going to have to get together and circle the wagons against the Americans and Israel and all that. So they are beating the drums of war to such a fever pitch that it's causing the Muslims to look seriously now at banding together, even the ones that are not violent. They're thinking about their survival today. If America is going to go after Muslims and go to all these nations and wipe them out, as they're being told today, then this is a horrible thing to get them thinking about having to go to war with America, and many of them right here in the nation. So
and I
this
think
is all orchestrated, all of it orchestrated.
In other words, we're, once again, creating the best enemy our own money can buy.
That's right.
And, of course, as I pointed out, it was Jimmy Carter who toppled the Shah of Iran, who was our traditional supporter, had the sixth largest military in the world, was there a barrier against the Soviet expansion, if you believe the geopolitical pictures we've been told. And back in 1979, I just couldn't figure why we toppled the Shah and brought the radical extremist Ayatollah Khomeini to power, who we were told hated America, you know. And now, of course, it makes a lot more sense. Once again, we were creating this whole Islamic terrorist movement. But people don't understand that this is long-range planning. Who is the man who is responsible for it? Why, Zbigniew Brzezinski. He was the,
right.
And of course, who does Zbigniew Brzezinski work for? Why, he worked for David Rockefeller.
David Rockefeller.
But, of course, the average American can't begin to connect the dots and doesn't understand there's a much bigger picture. And, of course, David Rockefeller then certainly is one of the major architects of this New World Order, New World Religion. We've got Herman in Carmel. Hi, Herman. How are you doing?
Really well. I have a question regarding the possible smallpox immunizations here. America is preparing enough vaccines for its population and possibly for Israel. But if smallpox were introduced into the population by whoever and it began to spread, wouldn't it also spread to other countries? And how many of these countries could stop it? And what percentage of the people do you think would die from it?
All right, Jack, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I once again, we law enforcement and military people have seen so much corruption and pretext. We call lying pretext in the government.
I see.
You know, we can tell we can use pretext, but we can't lie. But it's identical. We've seen so much of this that we believe that the smallpox is being implemented for that very reason, to lower the population throughout the world, and also to cause our military, once again, like in the Gulf War, after the Gulf War, all of our young people, including some of my good friends and people on our mailing list, came down with the Gulf War sickness, and they were totally debilitated. They were tremendous healthy specimens when they went into the Gulf War, and then many of them died. I know some that are in wheelchairs right now, just about ready to die. So they're very nervous about another inoculation from this government, who they believe has poisoned them on purpose to destroy our military capability from with our young people, and then also the population control of the masses of Americans and people around the world. So there's a lot of nervousness about even if smallpox were to become a problem. They don't believe it'll be accidental, that it'll be dropped here and there on purpose today. So there's so much distrust among our military and law enforcement of this government that you can't hardly comprehend how we can function with our military accepting. I have letters here from soldiers that have gone to the brig and are being dishonorably discharged because they said no to these vaccinations. We've got so many Air Force pilots that have left the Air Force today because they will not take the inoculations. And I think they're 30% down today of military pilots because when they're told to take the anthrax and the smallpox, they're walking off.
Because they can get a good, they can get a good job in civilian life as long as they're healthy. And if they're not healthy, of course, they've lost their opportunity. And you know what's really almost frightening about this whole thing, if you stop and contemplate what's really going on. We have enough smallpox vaccine for the American population, we're told. We have enough for Israel, and there is some left over for Great Britain. Now, first of all, is there anybody out there in the audience who honestly thinks that Saddam Hussein would unleash a smallpox epidemic on the United States and the world? Because, of course, it would spread from the United States to all throughout the world.
Yeah.
When there is no vaccine to protect the people of Iraq, or of Saudi Arabia, or of Iraq, or Iran. In other words, these people would be devastated, and, you know, the epidemics in the past really would, you know, they've killed massive. I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest killers of all time has been smallpox. Now, one of the great triumphs of medicine was controlling smallpox. But then about 30 years ago, we were suddenly told you can't get a smallpox vaccine anymore, even if you want it. Why, we're from the government, and we're telling you it's just too dangerous. I mean, 2 people in a million will die from it. 15 people in a million will have some sort of encephalitis or permanent damage. So you're not going to be allowed to take a smallpox shot. Now, of course, they're giving hepatitis B to our children. There are far more people who had dangerous reactions to the hepatitis B vaccine than there were cases of hepatitis B in children under 14 in the year 1996. In other words, far more complications from the vaccine than were people who were infected with hepatitis B up to age 14. So they're really not concerned about our health. And I looking back on that time, I couldn't understand why they wouldn't let us get the vaccine. Maybe it wasn't necessary. Maybe there was no more smallpox. Why would they literally outlaw the smallpox vaccine? So we have a whole generation of young people, young fertile people who of course will bring about the next generation, but these people have no immunity to smallpox. If there was a smallpox outbreak in the world, Herman, countless hundreds of millions of people would die, but they have enough vaccine for the American people and for the people of Israel, and for, I don't know how many much they have for the people of Great Britain. Isn't that interesting? Is it possible that they're going to preserve the Anglo-American establishment in Israel and let the rest of the people die? I hope and pray there is no smallpox. But nothing makes sense to me other than the scenario I've laid out. They have intentionally and purposely kept people from being vaccinated for 30 years, left the people susceptible, guaranteeing there was no more smallpox in the world, and now they tell us there's going to be a smallpox attack. It's not a matter of, or there may well be a smallpox attack. If there is a smallpox attack, and I hope and pray that it is not, but if there is, just consider the scenario I've laid out. Anything else, Herman?
Wow. I just wanted to ask the address, if someone wanted to order the Vampire Slayer, or do you have a newsletter? Could you give us that number to call?
Certainly, yes. We would prefer, because we're just inundated with phone calls. If you would write to us, let me give you an address, and we'll send a copy of that out to you.
You can't put out the price of it, but I just, you know, I think about it, a good, generous donation, because they, Jack has to survive, and they have no funding from the Rockefeller Foundation, I can guarantee.
Right. Yes, and we're all volunteers up here, and every penny comes in, we need to use it to print and pay postage to our police and soldiers out there that are requesting massive amount of information today. And many of them don't send money. They, for some reason, maybe they don't have money, but every donation helps us. And if you'd write to us, it's $11, by the way, for the Operation Vampire Killer 2000 Police and Military Action Plan for Stopping World Government Rule is what the subtitle is. And write to us to Aid and Abet, A-I-D, and sign, you can just put the and sign, Abet, A-B-E-T, and that's good enough. And send that to HC11. That's HC, like Henry Charles, 11, box 357, like the good old Magnum I carried on duty for years. 357, that's the box number. And it's Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, ID is the abbreviation, and it's 83536. 83536. And if you'd like a sample copy of the Aid and Abet Police and Military Newsletter on constitutional issues, put in an extra $3 donation if you would. We'll send it to you if you don't have the money, and you can print all the copies you want to, but we certainly do need the funds to reorder from the printer. So that's best if you write to us to Aid and Abet Police and Military Newsletter, HC11, Box 357, Kamiah, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536, and we'll send you information. In the back of the newsletter, it lists our tapes and books and things, and we also have a new sheriff's video that shows the sheriff his duties and powers, and there's two sheriffs on there talking to the fellow sheriffs, Sheriff Richie Mack and another sheriff and myself and Wayne Hage and Congressman Helen Chenoweth is on there talking about the sheriff's duties and powers. That's a very important video to help stop some of these federal programs in your county. If the sheriff knew what his jurisdiction and powers were, you can really do some good things in the county, as some of our good sheriffs are doing today, standing up against some of the federal encroachments into our county and state government.
And, of course, Jack lives in Idaho County up there, and certainly a couple of good supervisors. The conservative Christians are in control, at least in one area in the country. It starts up there in Idaho County, largest county in the state, and hopefully it's going to spread across America. So
it's
a matter of people getting involved, and certainly a lady who is one of the councilwomen, or whatever they call them, a regular listener to Radio Liberty. We had her on here not too long ago.
Yes, Alice is
doing a great job.
And Alice and Pat, and then we voted out the judge and voted one of our own people in as judge, too. So
it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, praise the Lord. We can take back our country, but it looks like we got to take it from the bottom up, brother. We got to come from the county, take the counties, and take the state. And through states' rights, you can keep a lot of these federal programs from destroying your state and your economic base. And in our area of the country, the Northwest, they're destroying the forest industry and the mining industry to try to get everybody into the population centers so they can be better controlled in there.
And that's what it's really all about. And what we need to do, of course, is get people to understand our Constitution. If you're out there across America, you need to set up an institute of the Constitution in your community and begin teaching people about our heritage and how we lost it. Anything else, Herman?
Well, I'd just like to leave people with the thought, for those that say it can't happen here, go back and read German history before Hitler came to power and during and before World War II. The German army had chaplains. They prayed to God. They believed they had a noble cause to fight communism, and which was the terrorism of their day. And, you know, if even Adolf Hitler invoked God's name, the so-called, he believed the Christian God, although he was serving somebody else. So just because a president says, God bless America, I mean, that's not just reserved for, you know, for us. I mean, other countries claim to do the same thing. So
as it was in Hitler's Germany, remember, Hitler was democratically elected. Hey, thanks so much, Herman.
You bet. God bless you both.
Right,
bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Herman from Carmel. And, of course, this is so true. You have to understand that in Hitler's Germany, why, of course, the church went right along with what was happening. There were a few ministers who had the courage to speak out. Reverend Niemöller, and certainly Bonhoeffer, and there were others. But if you haven't read the book Hitler's Cross by Erwin Lutzer, it's an important book. He talks about how they used Romans 13, this idea that, oh, we're just to obey the government. This is what Paul told the Romans back there. They had a terrible government in Rome, a terrible pagan, authoritarian government. You're to go right along with that government, you know, because God put them in power. Well, God in America gave us a constitutional republic, where our rulers, where our elected representatives were not our rulers. They were to be our servants. They were to be public servants. And, of course, we lost that because the church was preaching the false gospel, the same gospel that was being preached in Hitler's Germany, that neutralized the Christians, and look at the terror that followed. I was in Germany after the Second World War. I saw the cities with nothing but rubble. I saw the devastation and the helpless and blank looks on the faces of people. And that's what happens to people who, of course, believe a false gospel and are not involved and are not willing to take a stand for righteousness. The German people, the good German people, were always in the majority, but that really didn't matter because their leadership was cautioning them, don't get involved. And our plea to you and Jack's plea is you have an obligation to be involved because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Jack, we've just got a little bit of time. What are the thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Well, you know, I want the people to think, and you do too, Brother Stan, that when George Bush gets up and talk about the horrendous things that this little dictator over there in Iraq does to his people and others, you know, remember, folks, and I don't know if you've done a show on this. I hope you will, Stan, if you haven't. But you can just look at Angola, Mozambique, South Africa, the Sudan, and Zambia, and other areas, and millions of people are being killed by the government, many of them Christians, and there is not a single word from the United Nations about these things, or George Bush. So it's a con, and we need to expose these things so that they see that the president is really just going to Iraq for other reasons than what he's telling us.
Well, thank you so much, Jack, and our guest has been Jack McLam of Aid and Abet, a newsletter, and get the newsletter, get the information, help to get the information out across America. God bless you, and we'll look forward to having you with us in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for coming on tonight, Jack.
Thank you, Brother Stan, for all you do for America.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Jack is a very, very courageous individual. He was willing to stand up when he was a police officer for what he felt was right, and that was the Constitution. And that really is what we have to stand up for, because the Constitution was built upon biblical principles. People always say, oh, America was never a Christian nation. Well, that's because they've never studied the history of America. They've never studied the writings of our founding fathers. They don't understand that the men who created our Constitution were writing from a biblical and Christian worldview. Even Thomas Jefferson, who many people will say, well, he wasn't a Christian. He's not the sort of Christian I am. Of course, if you read Thomas Jefferson's writings, he'll say, I am a Christian and the only way Christ would ever want us to be. And I'm not here to argue theology. I am here to argue the fact that when Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, he was writing from a Christian worldview. And he included in the Declaration of Independence the writings of John Locke, who talked about nature's God and nature's law, and the right to life, liberty, and property. They changed it to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But he then took the writings of a man named Samuel Rutherford, who had written about all men were created equal. He wrote a book called Lex Rex. The law is king, not the king is law, but Lex Rex, the law is king. And in that he said, all men are created equal. All men are created in sin. The king is created in sin. The people are created in sin, so why should that the king have the right to rule over people? And it was this idea that all men were created equal that came out of Samuel Rutherford's writings that were then incorporated into the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson. And if you read through the Declaration, why you find there are at least four separate references to the Creator, the nature's God and nature's law, the supreme ruler of the universe. And, of course, the document concludes with a reference to and with the support of God, divine providence. We mutually, in support of this declaration, we mutually pledge to one another our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. And then, of course, if you read the Constitution, you'll find out that it was signed in the day of our Lord. That was an acknowledgement, of course, that our Lord was Jesus Christ. You read about vetoing of bills, of course. You had so many days to veto a bill, with the exception of Sunday. Why? Because Sunday was Lord's Day. There was no question in anybody's mind that America was to be the first Christian nation, not any religious sect, not Congregationalist, not Anglican, but to be a Christian nation. But that, of course, is the fact that is seldom or ever mentioned in America today. And until people understand the foundations of our heritage and why America is worth saving, why there is no way we're going to be able to preserve our society. And so that's why the institutes on the Constitution are so vitally important, because we can't reclaim our Christian heritage unless people understand that we indeed do have a Christian heritage. Well, this is the time of the program when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you out in the listening audience to help us as 5 hours a day all across America. We bring the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And, of course, 5 hours on radio, 5 hours on the Internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave, and hopefully before long we're going to be able to increase our satellite time and reach out to additional stations across America. We have about 50 stations now, or types of outlets that hear one or another of our programs. Some people hear it every day. Some people hear it just for half an hour a week. But the people who hear the program are hearing the truth, and people are beginning to change their perspective. And we just need to get that message out in increasingly large numbers across this country, but we can't do it without the help of people who really care enough to commit themselves and to sacrifice to help us. And some people can give more than others. That's really up to you. We hope that many of you will feel that you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And the members of the Radio Liberty family ordinarily will receive the 4 best tapes of the month. They'll ordinarily receive our monthly newsletter. But it's their efforts that help month in, month out, us to continue doing what we do. Now, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'd be more than happy to send it to you. If you just give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and our latest newsletter deals with the possible threat of biological warfare. Will there be a biological attack? Well, certainly if you listen to Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI, and to Dick Cheney, they will tell you it's not a matter of if, but there's going to be terrorist attacks and probably chemical and biological warfare attacks. Why do they say this? What do they know? Well, obviously they know something. I think Dick Cheney knows a great deal about what's going to happen. In fact, on the very evening of the September 11th attack in 2001, why Dick Cheney and the members of his White House staff were started on a 6-week course of Cipro, which is a potentially dangerous drug, but of course it's life-saving, faced with pulmonary anthrax. So obviously they suspected or knew that the anthrax was coming a few weeks later, the anthrax attack. And, of course, they won't tell anybody how they knew or why they suspected an anthrax attack was coming. But, of course, if they knew or suspected, why is it they think that they didn't tell the American people so that some of them, if they wanted to, might have started on antibiotics? And, of course, Larry Klayman keeps trying to get them to explain why, keep putting in freedom of information requests to the White House, but they're not about to tell why or how they knew the anthrax attack was coming. But I think you ought to put credence into what Dick Cheney says. He certainly was right on that one. Is he right on the next one? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I believe that we can look beyond the obvious. We can look into the spiritual. And I believe that God punishes nations that turn their back on him. Is there anybody that can really look in their heart today and say that America is a righteous nation? Oh, there are a lot of people that get up and talk about God and heaven, but nobody ever talks about hell or God's judgment on nations. There are very, very few of our ministers that will take a controversial position and take a stand on homosexuality. In fact, most of them would not even think about putting a home school or a school into their church, because after all, it would, well, the children mark up things, and yet, of course, we've turned our children over to the state, where they're destroying the love of God and family and country. Well, I believe that it's time that we did take a stand, and because I believe terrible things lie ahead for this country, and that's why we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if we can't bring people back into a personal relationship with our Lord, I believe we're going to lose America. And lastly, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.